Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in. Today we have Mark Lukacs joining us, and Mark shares this very, very vulnerable, personal story that he ended up writing a book about. His wife, Julia, and he started a very nice relationship. It was sort of the fairy tale romance. They fell in love at 18, they got married, and they started off living their dream in San Francisco. But some years later, Julia unexpectedly had a psychotic break. It landed her in a psych ward for nearly a month, and over the next few years, they both struggled with what was bipolar and a lot of depression, suicide, and a lot of uncertainty and difficulty in their life. The way that Mark managed his feelings was to write this book, My Lovely Wife in the Psych Ward. And it's above all, it's really a conversation about loyalty, love, commitment, how to handle the challenges, what to do with mental illness, which many people don't talk about. It's so vulnerable, so honest, so authentic. I love chatting with him. I really think you guys should check out this book. It's really inspirational. It really is deeply a love story and about perseverance. Tune in. Enjoy the show. If you want to find out more, you can find Mark at Mark Lukacs, L-U-K-A-C-H, and it'll all be on my website, show notes, links to his book, but you can find it at Barnes & Noble's, any bookstore, Amazon, and again, thank you for tuning in. Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. Today we are joined by Mark Lukacs. Hey Mark, how's it going?
Hey Laura, how are you?
I am fantastic, and I am really excited, which is strange to use that word, as everybody will listen in a moment, to hear your story and talk to you. I've been really looking forward to this conversation. The author of a new book, My Lovely Wife in the Psych Ward. And it's just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful story of love and loyalty, and during a difficult time where your wife suffers from mental illness. And I know it sounds strange to say I'm excited, but this book was so vulnerable and honest and authentic and open. Despite the topic being so serious, it was just so inspirational. So thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you. I'm really honored to hear that that's how you felt about the book. It's great to hear.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a tough subject, but anybody out there that, you know, is listening, if you're thinking about reading this, it's ultimately a deeply inspirational story, but catch everybody up, because I've read it. I've been reading about you. As I understand it, you and your wife were happy. Things were going well in your life. You met young at 18, and then in a day, everything shifted. Can you take us back a little bit and tell us the story?
Sure thing. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. We met our first week of college and fell in love very quickly while we were, you know, barely adults. And it just was like effortless. We had a lot in common and really enjoyed each other's company. And also we were just young, and it was like, oh, I like hanging out with this person. It's great, you know? And we began to already very quickly in our relationship began to consider a future together, but we really didn't have any idea what the full implication of that. I think we thought of the future within these, like, what today we would maybe call Instagram filters, you know, of like things looking really picturesque and romantic and full of fun and excitement. And honestly, we lived that life for a while. Like we were together for 9 years, married for 3 until Julia started a new job. And it was, like you said, pretty much from the first day of that job, things were different, where Julia had always been super successful and really accomplished and ambitious in all of her work endeavors. And all of a sudden, she was really lacking in confidence and felt kind of stuck at work. And that spiraled quickly to the point where she lost her appetite. She started to have trouble sleeping and then just stopped sleeping altogether. And then ultimately, she ended up having a psychotic break. And I didn't even know what that was at the time. I just knew that Julia was basically having delusions and talking about life not being worth it anymore, and that she could never be fixed or saved. And so why not just give up, you know? And that's when I basically took her to the emergency room, where she was admitted to the psych ward. And that really began a whole unexpected turn in our lives. And as I chronicle in the book, Julia's had 3 episodes with psychosis. over the course of 5 years. Her psychosis is always followed by a very deep and suicidal depression. And so the episodes themselves actually end up lasting anywhere from about 6 to 10 months. So they're very consuming of our lives. And really the struggle that we've tried to approach as a husband and wife is like how to have this major health challenge in our lives, but not let it ruin our relationship and tear our family apart. And that is really, I think, what the heart of the book is about.
That's what I took from the book. And I mean, I was so overwhelmed by the story, right? Because as you've just laid out, and for anybody listening, I mean, he goes into a lot of detail about each of these steps and is just honest and open, which first I want to ask you, the topic of mental health and mental illness and bipolar and medications and, you know, psych wards, these are typically things that have a stigma.
Oh, absolutely.
What allowed you to be so honest and vulnerable, and how did you manage that? How did your wife feel about that?
You know, that's a good question. I'll answer from my perspective first. I distinctly remember one day Julia was in the hospital, and we used to live out by the beach in San Francisco, and I was walking our dog down to the beach, and I ran into this, you know, acquaintance who I kind of knew from surfing, didn't know very well, but knew that she was a really nice person. And she said, "Hey, how are you?" And I just like, I was having a tough day. I mean, Julia was like at her second week of the hospital. I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea what her diagnosis was. And I basically just told her, I was like, "You know, honestly, I'm not doing really good. I'm actually doing really bad." And she was like, "What's going on?" And we ended up stopping and talking for a really long time. And she has since brought that conversation up to me many times. And I think it was like my first moment where I realized that a lot of these things that we hide and are ashamed of, we kind of impose, we end up imposing these like forced isolation chambers around ourselves because we're scared of how people might react. But instead, this woman who, again, I didn't really know that well, but she was just so kind and gracious when I ended up talking to her. And that honestly became like the first in a pattern where if I was reaching out to my friends, they had a really just like empathetic approach. And I just kind of found like, wow, when you are willing to show your pain, it's very, very rare that someone kicks you when you're down or says, "Hey, I can't handle that. Please be quiet," and change the topic, you know?
Yeah.
Instead, they're like, they open up their heart to you. And so I think it really started on micro level to like, you know, this stigma around these issues is really unfair and it's really difficult for people to navigate. You know, I think Julia and her recovery felt something similar because some of her most important members of her support system are not necessarily, yes, she's got an amazing therapist and great psychiatrist, and those are really critical members, but they're actually people who went out a limb and opened up to Julia and said, "This is what I have. This is what I've gone through. And look where I am in life. And like, you can make it the way that I made it." And that vulnerability meant so much to Julia. And I think she kind of wanted to pay it forward, you know? And so as we went through our experience and I turned to writing as a way to process what was all happening, because I'm not a trained writer, you know, I'm actually a history teacher.
Yeah.
And the writing becoming a way to sort out my thinking, Julia and I both kind of collectively realized, you know, I think we've got a story here that people could connect to. Wouldn't it be great if we could hopefully help others by sharing it, you know? And so I don't think we fully appreciated what that would mean when we did it, you know, like I think we just kind of went for it and we're like, "Hey, we'll see how it goes. And if people respond well, great. If they don't, we just won't read the comments," you know?
Yeah. And I mean, doesn't it sort of feel like, did you find in that experience of sharing and then people opened up, it's as if you've given permission to somebody else. If I go first and I make myself vulnerable, so many people I think really deeply desire to have that opportunity, but we're so afraid that the other person won't receive it well, that you're really, in fact, by sharing your own vulnerabilities and difficulties, giving them the opportunity to do the same. And it's really kind of a gift.
I completely agree with you. And maybe it's not with me. Maybe it's with someone else in their life. But like, I just think that I think you nailed it on the head by calling it a gift. You know, like I think we understandably feel like we have to put on a performance so much in life, you know, and I'm not saying that we should all go around and like broadcast our various woes constantly. But like, if you do that, it just can, you immediately, like, you fast track to this deep connection, which you're not going to get otherwise. And I think it feels really affirming to both people. And it becomes like an experience that you carry with you and take with you into the rest of how you, you know, just how you go about your days.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point because, you know, we're brought up to think of it as complaining and bringing my negativity. And definitely, I don't like that. I don't think anybody really likes to be bombarded by somebody's, you know, I went downtown and it was so stressful and I was stuck in traffic. And that's not vulnerable, right? Like, that's just negative.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think when you get to that deeper stuff and you share that heartfelt stuff.
Yeah. Instead of, like you said, instead of, wow, I had really bad traffic, but instead just more really kind of getting into some of your pains, and because traffic is annoying, but it's not painful, or it's not a truth either. It's not afraid. It doesn't make you afraid, you know?
Yeah.
And like, if you get into that stuff, that's when I think people have these amazing reactions. I mean, like, even in the professional world, like, I remember speaking with Julia's case manager, because when someone's in the hospital, there's, you know, the doctor, the nursing staff, and then the case manager kind of like coordinates between the hospital and their family. And I just remember the case manager was the person who, I don't know, like, I actually felt like she was keeping an eye out on me, because I was telling her just how scary this was and how uncertain life all of a sudden felt. And I didn't know if Julia was ever going to get better and what that meant for her and me. And she just really responded in such a supportive way. You know, it was just really incredible.
Yeah, no, and to get back to this, I mean, you found yourself, right? Like, your wife is literally being checked into a psych ward. It's unclear if the drugs are working, maybe talking about electrotherapy. I mean, things really got to a bad place.
Yes.
You know, when you're talking about pain and really uncertainty, right? This is the real deal. This is definitely, you know, more than I think those day-to-day struggles that a lot of us face. When you got to those lows and you found yourself in those moments, and you talk about a day that you went, you know, surfing and you just cried and saw a couple of dolphins, how do you, and you can share that story if you'd like, and how that brought you back, but how did you consistently bring yourself out of these states of fear, out of these states of, you know, uncertainty, anxieties, where maybe a lot of people would have left, back to the state of loyalty and commitment?
Yeah. So that's a great question too. And like, so the first thing is I think during her first hospitalization, during what felt probably like my lowest moment of uncertainty around my capacity for commitment. Like, I was literally questioning this exact concept. I was like, I have no idea if Julia's going to get better or not. One of her favorite movies is Love Actually. And there's this character in it who she's falling in love with this guy because she keeps getting called away because her brother suffers with a mental illness, and he calls her constantly, and she basically can't live her life, you know, like, her sense of her life is gone. And I just kept remembering that character and wondering, like, is that going to be what my life is going to look like now, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was really scared. And so I'm a surfer. And so I went surfing, but I didn't really feel like surfing. I just wanted to be in the ocean. So I paddled out pretty far, and I was just sitting in there. And like you said, like, having this really existential breakdown. What happens, but whether you want to call it God or nature or whatever, sends along these two dolphins that swam right underneath me. You know, they just like were swimming in my way, were on my right side, popped up underneath, went on my left side, and just kept going. And I was like, it just felt like such an obvious message to me, because I'm sitting out there in the middle of the ocean and these two dolphins are just on their path together. And that was like, yep. That's me and Julia, and I'm going to stay on this path with her. And so, to get to your question of like, how do I, like, what about me wanted to make that commitment? I think I've already given you a sense of it. Like, I'm, you know, I grew up Catholic with a sense of religious faith. And, you know, to be honest, my religious faith has morphed quite a bit, but I still do believe that it like, when it all comes down, there is something out there that's taking care of each of us, you know? That there's this protective, loving force. And I'm a very deep believer in that. And I think that that has instilled in me a lot of the optimism that I bring into my life. And so, like, even though the chips were definitely down with Julia, I still had this underpinning faith that things that I was still being protected, that I wasn't even necessarily guaranteed that like, so it was going to get better and we're going to go back to this like fairy tale romance, but more just like that I was loved by something big, much bigger than me, and that it was going to all be okay in some way, even if I couldn't understand how it was going to be okay. And so with that all in mind, I was like, yeah, I mean, this is the person I fell in love with when I was like, we basically discovered what adulthood is together. It just felt like, she just felt like family. She was so clearly my family at that moment. And I grew up with parents who modeled, I think, in their own personal relationship, but also in the way they helped to raise me and my three siblings. Like, the family is something you don't give up on, you know? Mm-hmm. Family is kind of, when everything else is uncertain, family can be the one steady thing. And so I wanted to be that steady thing for my family in that moment, knowing that there were going to be other moments where I would need something reliable, and I knew it would be in my family, you know?
And did you, I mean, I love this. I love this commitment. And this is what I mean. Guys, if you check out the book, you'll feel this through the pages. But did you surprise yourself? I mean, were there moments where you're like, I didn't know I had it in me? Like, right? Like, you're really being tested.
Yeah. So the truth is like, it's kind of weird, but actually the moment where I felt, after I had that dolphin moment, I was sort of like, all right, that's it. You know, it's no problem. I actually felt the most strain after Julia got better. Because once she got better, we had these, although it was, you know, a year basically of bipolar disorder, our experiences of them were so different. And we had a hard time processing that and coming back together. And it was at that moment when I was like, when things were normal, that I actually really began questioning my capacity. Because I was like, you know, I think I've shown that I can hang on through tough times, but now we're back in normal times. And am I getting out of this what I feel like I'm entitled to? Like, as a person, am I getting the mutual love and support that every person deserves mm-hmm. out of their relationships? Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. And that was where Julie and I had to really go through this. Honestly, it was pretty painful, but it was super important process of like renegotiating what the terms of our relationship were now that we had this huge, like memory and experience of a very demanding caregiving experience. And also for her, a very demanding mental illness, you know, like we couldn't just operate in under like life as we expected it always to be, you know, because it clearly wasn't anymore.
No, I love this idea of renegotiation because look, when you're young and you're in love, there's this big bubble. I had Dr. Laura Berman on, who is this sex and relationship therapist, and she put it so well. She's like, that first bubble is just chemical, you know, like that's yeah. not love. That's just yeah. chemicals. Then you get into the real stuff.
Yes.
And this renegotiation, right? Like people are stuck on a lot of these negotiations. Who's going to take the garbage out? What time do you come home for dinner? You know, this is the stuff that we bog down on all the time. And I always think of it as like two CEOs that run a company without a board, and it's 50-50, like the shares. And so it's really hard because nobody ultimately can make the final call. You have to really negotiate. And when you're dealing with this level of complexity, what process did you guys go through? How did you define, you know, your roles or what your needs were? Did you get help with that? Because I think, yeah. you know, even if people aren't going through as difficult of a time, this is a real struggle.
Yeah. First off, I love the analogy of two CEOs. I never thought of it that way, but that is so spot on because we both really, we want to be autonomous and also support each other's autonomy, but we also need to be, we need to have a shared vision. Otherwise, how is this going to work, you know?
Yep. Yep.
So for us, we first just tried to like live it and go back, like, in the day-to-day, but we couldn't do that. We needed to actually put all the cards out on the table. So then we tried couples therapy, but I don't think we were emotionally ready for dealing with some of these difficult memories, you know? And I get into this in the book, but like basically when Julie was ill, I had to manage a lot of her life for her because she was so either medicated or depressed or psychotic, you know? Mm-hmm. And that sense of management unfortunately bred a lot of resentment in both of us, you know, and we just had to deal with that resentment. So trying it in our day-to-day didn't work at the beginning. Couples therapy didn't work. We just weren't ready. So we actually first began by escaping. We took a 4-month round the world trip.
I love this, by the way.
And that was actually phenomenal because we got ourselves out of our home environment and put ourselves into a constantly changing and unpredictable environment where we had to go back to relying on each other for small things like, where are we going to eat tonight? Or big things like, you know, I got my foot really badly infected on a cut when we were living on a farm in outside of Jakarta. And like, I needed Julie to help me with getting to a hospital and all that stuff. And then like, it's just like this sense of relying on each other helped to, I think, get us back on the same page more. But then honestly, the biggest thing that we did is I ended up writing about this to Julia. Like the real genesis of this book was that I wanted to explain to Julia. I just felt this really deep need for validation that like, I just don't think she quite got it, what this caregiving thing was for me. And
don't you think, Mark, that's because the focus is on the person with the challenge, right? And
exactly.
Then they become consumed with, understandably, managing this challenge, but the other side of the equation is rarely discussed or even thought about. And, you know, this idea that the resentments were in both ways, right? Like that's pretty deep.
Exactly. And I was like, I mean, like I said, I get it too. Like she was so consumed with what she was going through, but when she was in a moment out of it, like when we had this stretch of time in between episodes, and she's had three episodes, but there's obviously time in between. In those moments, I need to be able to say like, look, I need you to hear what this was for me, you know?
Yeah.
And so writing became really great because, you know, when you're in conversation, I mean, I can even like hear myself as I'm talking, I'm still searching for a lot of the words, right? But like, if I write it, I can really edit it and polish it and make sure it's really saying my truth in the way that it needs to be said. And then Julia, on her own time and space, can read it and she can hear that truth. And then we can come together and talk about it. And that really became the process for us. It was almost like this letter I wrote to Julia that then put into book form, you know, of like, I need you to hear what this was so that I can feel this really, really desperate need for validation. I can feel like that's been filled. And then we can actually go and move on and go back to living the life that we want, you know, because otherwise this felt like it was going to continually be something that was going to just be like a wedge point that drove us apart unless we actually just addressed it.
I love this idea. And I'm curious, would you say it's because you mentioned I had to write my truth and then I needed my truth validated. And it makes me think that as you are being, you know, placed into this role of caregiving and it becomes about your wife, not to her fault, but it just is, is it that you were losing your truth? And then this was a way to sort of get control back, like not control, but bring yourself back to the surface again, because right, you kind of have to let go a lot of yourself to be that caregiver. Did this kind of help you find yourself and your truth again so that, you know, you didn't lose yourself in this process?
Yeah, I think definitely. You know, like I think I would have these momentary feelings, but not have, just truly didn't have the time and space to actually acknowledge them. You know, like for example, in the year of her first episode, we had a lot of friends find really major career success, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy for them, but I was so, and I could only have the time to feel this for a second that like, God, everyone's going through these amazing things and my life is stuck. I don't even have a career now, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
Career doesn't even exist for me. Am I going to get it back? Am I going to find success, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so like, that stuff, that's a really difficult thing to have to wrestle with, but I would only have 30 seconds to even just feel it. And then I'd have to just pretend it wasn't there and bottle it up because Julia's feeling depressed and feeling suicidal. And I got to be there to keep an eye on her and make her feel loved and comforted. And so like those feelings, I needed to acknowledge those fully so that I didn't end up even resenting my friends and their success.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yes, like stuck in envy, you know, like none of those are good feelings. So it was really more just like kind of like exercising some of these tough feelings that I had these moments of them. And then I just have to bottle them up and pretend they weren't there.
I mean, this show is all about authenticity, right? And this is what I write and think about. And it just sounds to me, you know, like you found this really healthy way to keep coming back to your truth, your voice, yourself, and not get buried in resentments and lose yourself in this process, right? Which would ultimately lead to the loss of the relationship.
I agree. And yeah, it was for me writing, you know, and I recognize, I would also say that a big part of it for me was being active. I've learned over time how important it is for me to take an hour to go out for a run or a bike ride or whatever it is so that I can feel the joy of being alive and then bring that joy into the other things that I do in the day, you know, but like, oh shoot, I forget where I was going with this. So that's okay. Why don't we just move on?
That's awesome. No, I think bringing that joy back, keeping yourself in the ecosystem, right? To not lose touch with your deeper self. You talk about, you know, that we live in a world of instant gratification and that you mentioned early on about this Instagram early years. How do you define love now that you've been through this much? How do you define this thing we do, right? Where we get married, stay with somebody for decades and decades and decades, but it's not instant gratification. It's not Instagram photos.
No, it's not. Or swiping left or right. You know, it's like, it's funny. Julia and I, when we were trying to understand how we define love in the context of our marriage, she would always talk about this sense of a spark. And I think that's what your previous guest was saying about the chemical, right? Just this like feeling of excitement at being around the person and all of that. And like, I think a lot of relationships miss that when it goes away and really put a lot of effort into trying to rediscover it or getting, you know, kind of curious if you feel that for somebody different, you know? But like, I think that what I have found love to really be is that if you love someone, you prioritize kindness towards that person. Like, you're going to just put the effort into taking care of them. And that might mean taking care of them like, oh, I'm at the grocery store. Like, for example, I'm going to go ahead and toot my own horn here a little. This morning, my wife was up a little early. She was a little stressed out. She's got some stuff on her mind for work. I had to run to the grocery store to get stuff for our son's lunch because we unexpectedly ran out of a few things. And while I was there, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get Julia an iced coffee because I know she likes it. And we don't have our coffee maker at home's broken. She didn't ask, but that just might be a little way that she knows that I'm thinking about her and trying to be kind to her. And you know, that was it. It's not huge, right? This is not like this giant romantic gesture, but I could see in the smile when I gave her the coffee that she was like, she felt loved, you know? And so like, to me, love is with these ways through words, through actions, and even through intentions of just being kind, prioritizing kindness towards them over whatever other distracting. And there's tons of excuses that get in the way of being kind. You're too tired. You're too busy. Your phone is too interesting, whatever. But like, prioritizing that kindness. Yeah.
I love it. I can't remember who it was, but I remember listening to somebody. It might have been Stephen Covey, but he was giving a lecture and somebody said, you know, I have a wife and it's been 20 years and I just don't feel that feeling. I don't feel that feeling. But I want to stay with my wife, but I don't know that I love her. And he said, love her. And the guy said, no, you don't understand. I don't feel the feeling. And he said, then act in accordance with love.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And when you have a child, anybody who has a child who's listening knows all you're doing is acting in accordance with love for years. They don't do anything back, but you love them. So love comes from action in the, like, you know, path of love. Well, we only have another moment left here, Mark. I just wanted to quickly ask you, I ask everybody who comes on the show, what does an authentic life mean to you?
I think an authentic life is, oh, that's a great question. I think it's about being present with the people around you, including yourself. I think it's really about presence. And I actually think, I just mentioned the phone. I've referenced the phone in a few ways. I think that honestly, our phones are becoming a real detraction from authentic living. And it's a real bummer because I was super excited about technology and the ability to connect and all that other stuff. But I think that some of its kind of addictive nature can really suck us out of moments. And we were just talking about this together in regards to our son, that like, we want to be able to just be there in these moments with him, knowing that they are so fleeting. And, you know, he's 5 and he actually likes spending time with us and wants to be around us. And so let's reciprocate that. Let's be with him now before he grows up and becomes a teenager and maybe isn't as interested in spending time with us. And so it's really just about like being in this place, in the room with the people who are with you. And again, that also means yourself.
Mark, thank you so much for coming on, sharing this lovely story, taking the time to write this for anybody out there that's struggling or just wants to read a beautiful story. My lovely wife in the psych ward, where can they find a copy? Where can they find out information about you?
So everyone's welcome to check out my website, which is marklukach.com. The book is available in most major bookstores. It's actually a real thrill for me to go into a bookstore in a town and see it on the shelves. You can also find it, of course, on places like Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, etc. So kind of pretty much wherever you usually buy books, hopefully it's there. And if it's not, ask to see if they'll sell it. That'd be cool. That's a cool way to help support the book.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on and sharing your beautiful, vulnerable story.
Sure thing. Thanks so much for having me, Laura.